All right, we're in CLR world again.
How are you doing? Who are you?
Good, I'm fine. My name is Thomas. I am a developer working on the managed debugging infrastructure for the CLR team. I've been on the team for almost 7 years.
Nice.
Okay.
I'm Dave Broman. I'm a developer on the profiling API. I've been with CLR for about four and a half years.
Excellent.
I'm John Langdon. I'm a PM on the CLR team. We're all on the developer services team, which exposes APIs basically for tool writers to provide tools for managed code, for example, debuggers, profilers, things like that. I've been on the team about 4.5 years now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. So let's talk about this general space.
Okay.
You guys provide a set of APIs, mm-hmm. and developers take advantage of them.
Basically, we expose a set of APIs that, on behalf of managed code developers. So specifically the APIs we expose are the profiling, iCore profiling, and iCore debugger, iCore debug APIs. And people build performance and memory profilers and debuggers on those APIs respectively. So for example, Visual Studio Profiler is built on the profiling APIs, at least in part, and the Visual Studio Debugger for managed code is built on the iCore Debug managed code debug APIs. Additionally, the team also integrates support for error reporting. So you know, on Windows, you have the experience, you have an application crashes that asks if you want to upload some data.
Mm-hmm.
We've integrated that with CLR, so you can actually get some managed code relevant data when an event like that occurs. So it'll upload some dumps to the back-end servers, and then developers, the idea is they can download those dumps and they can use the tools to debug those and kind of figure out what their application is doing in the wild. So that's another service our team exposes.
Now, in that case, I mean, sometimes the CLR is just going to crash, right? So you have an out-of-memory exception or mm-hmm. some other weirdness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically, it's not an opt-in thing. So if I'm writing a managed app, mm-hmm. I don't have to like opt-in for the Watson debugging, right?
Correct. It's actually based on whatever the settings are in the OS.
Mm-hmm.
So Watson is opt-in, opt-out. Basically, I think by default on Vista, you're opted in for first-level data, which is data that doesn't provide any kind of personally identifiable information.
Sure.
So the typical experience is, yes, if you have an application that's written in managed code that crashes, most users are going to be presented with a dialog that allows them to send that data.
Mm-hmm. So when you guys write your APIs, I mean, let's take me through like how you design an API for, I mean, bugs are random occurrences, right? Exceptions are exceptional things. So let's talk about your API. How do you design it? How does it work?
So we only have a few major customers for the debugging APIs.
Mm-hmm.
The two most notable ones are WinDBG and VS.
Okay.
So a lot of times our design decisions are driven by those user scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, iCore debug APIs were designed for VS customers.
Mm-hmm.
WinDBG came, and then CDB, etc. It came later. In WIBI, we had a prototype APIs for that customer base. And people have been using SOS, which use that private APIs,
mm-hmm.
prototypical APIs. We are in the process of doing a re-architecture. We're actually very close to completing, I would hope.
Excellent.
And part of the motivation for that is to have one unified set of APIs, so both VS and WinDBG can use the same APIs.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big features that we're enabling in Dev 10 is dump debugging in VS. In the past, you can do it with the prototype APIs that we provide, but you have to do it through SOS. So it's a different set of tools for our customers to learn,
okay.
and it's not really integrated into VS. In Dev 10, it's now all integrated into VS, so you can use VS to debug your dumps like you gather from Watson.
Excellent.
So that's a huge win for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's only really part of the re-architecture, though. The key part of the re-architecture that enables this is we are moving to an out-of-process model, where before, when you're doing managed debugging, we have a thread running in process of the debugger. that services requests for memory access and whatnot, and execution control, etc. And obviously, if you have that thread running to satisfy your inspection requests, you can't really do that with DUM because no thread is running in that case.
Mm-hmm.
But now, since we are moving to an out process model where we can do memory access from out process to do the inspection, that's what enables us to be able to do DUM debugging.
Excellent.
On the profiling end, we actually have several different customers. So we have actually a lot of forces acting on us from different angles. Probably about on the order of 20 different customers who write all different kinds of tools. Some of them are performance profilers. Many of them actually are not. So even though they're using the profiling API, they're using it for other purposes like code coverage, fault injection, monitoring, production systems. One of the things that the profiling API gives you is the ability to get really close to the metal, down to the ground, what's really going on under the seams, without a lot of abstraction between you and the CLR.
Excellent.
So we allow people to instrument IL. They basically take the IL we're about to JIT and execute, and then they just change it for their own purposes so they can monitor whatever they want or alter the behavior however they want. So when we go and we think about what do we need to do for the next version, we actually have a whole lot of input that we can juggle together and say, all right, well, what do these customers want? What do these customers want? And the biggest thing that almost everyone has asked for is the ability to attach their tool to a process that's already running. Unlike a debugger, we've had the limitation that if you want to run a profiler, you have to have it set to run as the process starts. You can't do it after the fact. So in V4, we're changing that, and we're adding the ability to run your profiler later on.
Excellent.
So the scenarios that we're enabling for that will be sampling, so that they're able to get good CPU performance numbers on mm-hmm. where what stacks are taking up the most time, and GC profiling. So if you want to get information on memory usage, those APIs will also be enabled for attaching profilers. And then as new versions come out, we're going to work on expanding the set of scenarios you can do after you attach.
Excellent. Now, from within the IDE itself, in Dev10, you're going to be enabling this. So in other words, as a developer, I'm writing unit tests, I'm doing the things I should do, but I'm also going to want to profile stuff before I ship it, before I compile it, and put it in packaging, or most likely on the web. So in Visual Studio, the tools are going to be there for me in Dev10.
Right. So our team is responsible for providing the API so that the tools can do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other end, the Visual Studio team, they have a profiler team in there as well, of course, a debugger team. And they take advantage of many of the new debugger features, and they will also be taking advantage of many of the new profiler features. For example, the ability to attach, say, their CPU sampling engine so that you can get good sampling numbers without having to run the profiler from the beginning.
Excellent. I would imagine you guys spend most of your time in the native world writing code. Yes?
Yeah, our APIs are pretty much all implemented, much as the CLR
Absolutely.
Itself is in native code. Yeah.
Sure. Cool, man. Let's talk a little bit about debugging and concurrency, mm-hmm. right? Concurrency is huge these days. The advent of ManyCore, everyone's kind of freaking out. Not freaking out, but I know the PCP people over in building 112 are doing mm-hmm. some rocket science. Mm-hmm. So what are you guys doing for the concurrent world of debugging?
We made some targeted changes in Dev10, or CLR V4. Basically, through the debugger API, we give you the ability to understand what locks a thread holds currently and what locks a thread is blocked on.
Okay.
We expect in future versions of the CLR, we'll be doing quite a bit more investment in this kind of space as we realize it's a very sort of fast-moving space and there's going to be a lot of investment there, I think.
Cool. So, I mean, as a program manager, you're very kind of close to the metal as far as customers come.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the big problems that customers faced in version 1 through 3 that you guys finally nailed in this version that they've been asking for?
One of the things we add in this version that has been a big request is 64-bit mixed mode debugging.
Mm-hmm.
So while it wasn't necessarily a big request in version 1 because we didn't support 64-bit, once we added 64-bit support in version 2, people began to quickly notice the inability to debug mixed mode, which means you can sort of debug the transition from managed to native code or both code types at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We added that also in Dev10. Another thing, too, that we added in V2 was the support for Watson, and as Thomas mentioned, or error reporting. And sort of the key piece of data there is the mini dump that gets uploaded. And the inability to debug that in sort of the tools that you're familiar with typically, which is Visual Studio, was a big blocker. So we've gotten a lot of feedback that dump debugging is something that people have wanted addition for. So I would say that those, from a debugger standpoint, are the two probably biggest or the key additions we've made in Dev 10.
Excellent.
And from a profiling standpoint, it's like Dave mentioned before, it's attached. We really want to, where we're trying to go is we really want to enable this sort of class of production tools. Dump debugging is kind of one of those. Often you're getting dumps in production to diagnose issues that just don't come up in test lab, for example. And on the profiling side, you really often don't want to enable that profile to run all the time. So adding attach was a very key investment for enabling that sort of first step in towards production diagnostics in the profiling space.
Excellent, man. And so one of the questions I have would be, like, where does IL fit into this? So, I mean, I know that in managed code, you go from syntax to IL, which gets jitted, and then all optimizations happen, and then you guys spit out x86 or, you know, what, IA64 or whatever processor you're targeting. Hopefully, I mean, that's a nice one.
We still
know that one well.
Yeah, you know that one well, huh? So, I mean, how does it work when you go back in the other direction, right? So you have x86, and I want to debug, and maybe I want to look at the IL. I mean, how does that work? I mean, just...
Right, so that part of the story, I guess, hasn't really changed from V2. You're right, like, you go from source code to IL, and then you go from IL to native instructions. Mm. At the iCore debug API level, the API that I work on, we are really working between native and IL.
Mm.
Right? The IL to source level mapping is done by the debugger. I think it's the same with the profiling APIs as well.
Yeah. PDBs, metadata. Mm.
Right. So the information that enables us to do all the mappings between native and IL is provided to us by the JIT. So when a JIT generates code for an IL method, it also gives us sequence points, which tell us, hey, this native offset maps to this IL offset and vice versa. And it also gives us the variable lifetime information, which means, okay, this variable is in, say, EAX from this offset to this offset. That's the kind of information that enables us to go back and forth between the IL world and native world. And then from IL to source, debuggers use information in the PDBs. For example, the source line to IL offset mapping that's stored in the PDBs.
Interesting. Very cool.
Yeah, and then in the profiler world, it's very similar. Mm-hmm. In fact, under the scenes, so let's say you're a profiler. Where mm-hmm. it really matters is you're either doing sampling or you're doing IL rewriting. And in both cases, you're interested in reasoning about the IL, reasoning about the way that maps to the jitted code. And so, as Thomas mentioned, we have a map that shows you the offsets between IL and how they correlate to offsets in the native code. Mm-hmm. And we actually share the same code that the debugging API uses to provide that map to the profiler and to allow the profiler to actually modify the map too, because the profiler oftentimes is acting very much like, say, a C# compiler, where it's generating IL. It looks at the IL that comes in, and it says, you know what, I want to add my own little logging routines here and here. Mm-hmm. And so it's creating a new batch of IL, and so it needs to be able to tell us, how does that new IL now map to the jitted code? And so it'll... Did I get that right?
Hmm.
Wait a minute. I'm confusing myself. No. It has to tell us how that new IL maps to the old IL.
Got it.
And, of course, we handle the mapping from the IL to the jitted code. So, yeah, it's very, very similar to what the debugger does. We use the same underlying code the debugger uses, or debugging API uses, to do that correlation.
Interesting. So, I mean, I was at lang.net this year and having sort of an argument, not that I was really capable to argue with this person, Lars Bach, the guy who invented the V8 engine for Google Chrome. And he was arguing that, you know, IL is completely unnecessary. And so I was just wondering from your perspective, like, it would make your job a lot harder, right, to go from the machine instruction code back up in your debugging and profiling. So IL, in a sense, helps you guys write these tools in an easy way, right? I mean, do you ever find yourself wondering, like, wow, is IL really necessary here?
Well,
just a random question. You guys know the answer.
This is just my personal opinion.
Good.
I think IL, it operates at a higher level. So, for example, I think it is much easier to understand IL than to say, for you to understand all three architectures, the native instruction set for all three architectures, right? So if you look at a piece of IL, you know what roughly what it's going to do on IS64 much more easily than, say, if you look at a piece of IL instruction code and then you want to say, oh, what is this really doing? Mm-hmm. You understand what I mean? But that's just my personal opinion. I used to work on the portability team back in V2, mm-hmm. so I did a lot of porting of the lower-level pieces of the runtime. And trust me, you don't want to learn how to write IS64 assembly code.
I hear you, man.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think it's just more a matter of, like, you know, crunching out as much performance as you possibly can, or, you know, without having to go through an extra level of abstraction. But it's a random topic, but since you guys work in this world, I wanted to throw it out there because
I lost
the argument.
A little bit more based on what Thomas said is that if you have one group that does the hard work of figuring out how to write a compiler that targets x86, x64, IS64, you know, whatever other platforms you want, mm-hmm. then you allow language developers to really focus on their language and not have to worry so much about the target architecture. So mm-hmm. you enable more of an ecosystem of C#, VB.NET, Visual, F#.
Sure.
You know, and it's an easier entry for other language developers. They don't have to worry about the target architecture, and all they have to do is learn IL and know how to compile down to that.
Absolutely.
And also, we get to own whatever optimizations we think are necessary or useful, and they don't have to worry about writing a fully optimized compiler either. They can just really focus on the language.
Excellent. Perfect. Good to hear this. And I've talked to Vance in this series of CLR interviews as well, mm-hmm. but before I had that little discussion with Lars. Cool. So you have code on your screen. Is that okay? I'm just kidding.
Yes, probably
nice,
some
man.
VS code, actually.
Perfect. So what else? You know, what else is going on here? Did you guys actually improve, like, the fundamentals of performance, right? Debugging performance?
That's actually an interesting question. So the architecture, from a debugger standpoint, the new architecture has potentially different implications in terms of performance. One can imagine that this in-process architecture that Thomas talked about earlier might be more high performance than, say, an out-of-process architecture. You can imagine the out-of-process architecture is much more chatty between the debugger and the target in terms of, like, a debugger makes a request and you have to go and query all this memory in chunks and get that back and forth. Whereas in the in-process model, you can just sort of ask this query of the helper thread. It can sort of package up all the data and then ship it back in sort of one operation. In practice, we actually haven't found, we haven't yet seen any performance issues that have been caused by the re-architecture itself. I know that the VS team, for example, they're our largest customer. They do quite a bit of performance investigation and quite a bit of performance testing around this. And so far, so we seem to be lucky. We haven't had any issues that have read on our re-architecture specifically. That said, we haven't gone and made specific performance improvements in this. We kind of rely on VS to help drive that to us. They help us kind of reverse engineer scenarios at our level from scenarios at their level. So say, hey, you know, our users typically we see them, you know, stepping through all their code and they expect this type of responsiveness. We need to kind of map what that means in terms of sequence of calls on our APIs and figure out what our performance characteristics need to be. So we rely on them a lot to help us provide that kind of data and investigation.
And what sort of work have you guys done to support the new side-by-side in proc CLR stuff?
That's a good question. So before we operated in this model, obviously, for about 10 years where you had one CLR in the process, and the debugger and the profiler APIs sort of lived by that. And basically, we always refer to them as startup APIs, sort of the thing that kind of gets you going when you want to write a profile. Like, how do you get your sort of top-level debugger or profiling object to help you sort of start poking at the target? And so what we did, I don't know if you've talked to folks yet about the new MetaHost API, but basically this is the hosting and activation API that is, we'll call in-proc side-by-side aware. And the debugger and profiler APIs are built on top in part and definitely in the same spirit as those. So essentially you can use these APIs to look at a target now, reason about what runtimes are loaded in the process, and then pick which instances you want to target. In the debugger, you can pick one currently. So you can debug V2 or you can debug V4, but you can't have a managed debugger attached to both of those simultaneously. Mm-hmm. That is a scenario we want to enable in the future between, say, like a V4 and a V6, like if that was the next side-by-side release from a runtime standpoint. From a profiling standpoint, there is support for profiling them all at the same time. It does involve some work in the profiler vendor side of sort of making their tool multi-instance aware, mm-hmm. But there is support for that in the profiling API.
Cool. I mean, of course, we're not giving people guidance to spin up a bunch of CLRs in a single process. I mean, it's really for compatibility reasons, I'd imagine, huh?
Yeah, and one thing that I want to expand on is also in the old debugging architecture, like Whitby and AUKUS, etc., we have, for managed debugging, we have built our own pipeline to communicate between the in-process part and the out-process portion. We communicate via IPC event, and then if you're doing interrupt debugging, then we also the out process component that VS uses mm-hmm. also owns the native debugging pipeline that is supported by the OS. So mm-hmm. we use the same native debugging pipeline as say WinDBG, and there's only one native pipeline per process. So with the old architecture, in proc side by side, if you want to debug multiple runtime instances, that's just not possible because there's only one pipeline that is available, and we own that pipeline in Whitby and AUKUS and before that. In the new architecture, that part of the motivation is to move that ownership to the debugger. So the debugger will own the native pipeline, and then we will act as more like what Rick Byers, I don't know if you talked to him yet, Rick likes to call a utility library. So we basically provide information about the managed state of the process and let the debugger handles all the execution control and event processing, etc. Mm. Basically let them own the hard part, and then we just tell them, hey, what the managed story is like. Yeah. So we're not there yet because we still haven't moved to the new architecture completely. But once that's done, that should enable us to allow you to debug multiple instances of the runtime simultaneously. But this is not a guarantee, though. We're still working towards that.
Certainly, I understood. Nothing is a guarantee when we talk about the future.
Yep.
KPR, are you happy now? Cool, man. I mean, definitely. But it's fun. I mean, we got to talk about we do think ahead mm-hmm. of the game. Mm-hmm. And you guys are working on problems. We're not getting specific. That's great. Mm-hmm. I can see a scenario when we have 100 core machines, where in fact maybe it would make sense to design applications that are running multiple instances of the CLR, because you have the power. I mean, you have a ton of memory and you have a ton of cores. Take advantage of it, right? I mean, I don't know. It's beyond. I don't think anybody really knows what 100 cores, what we would be able to do with that, because no one's ever thought of that before. But nevertheless, it's an interesting problem.
Although certainly what we try to do is have the CLR itself, even just one instance, be able to take advantage of the cores as much as possible. Like, for example, the GC, when it's running in server mode, I'm no expert on the GC,
sure.
But my understanding is that it'll try to create one GC thread per core.
Sure.
And you only need one CLR instance to do that. So it's going to try to take advantage of as many processors as you have. I think you were right on before when you said that the main reason we're doing this in-process side-by-side CLR is for compatibility reasons, where mm-hmm. if you designed a component, you tested it against V2, you'd kind of like it to run against V2 even after V4 has been released, because that's where you know it works really well. Mm-hmm. So, of course, there are a lot of policy decisions based on when we'll try to roll something forward versus keep it to what it was compiled against, but compatibility is my understanding of the primary reason.
Absolutely. That's a huge problem. I mean, do you have any compatibility issues with building new debugging APIs? And what if I wrote this tool that worked great on V3? What do I have to worry about when I want to run it on V4 without having to do a bunch of work?
We do try to maintain compat. We have not typically, for example, made the guarantee that, for example, Visual Studio 2005, or rather 2003, so a Whitby debugger could debug or rather an Everett debugger could debug a WIDB target. So we try, I generally consider that forwards compat, but we typically try to make it easy for debuggers who have an existing code base to migrate that, and profilers, to migrate that to the next version such that they can target those future versions. So for example, in VS 10, you'll be able to do multi-targeting. So you'll be able to debug both a WIDB, so a V2-based application or a V4-based application. There are some subtle API differences there, but for the most part, just going from V2 to V4 in terms of a debugger and what it targets and a profiler and what it targets is a fairly low-cost endeavor. But we also have a different bar for compatibility than the runtime itself, because we're not the runtime. So, we're not just going to float forward. And so an application, if you make a breaking change in the runtime and it just blows up, that's a very bad thing. Typically, we're dealing with a relatively limited numbers of partners who are building tools on top of us. And so we have a good communication channel with them where we can articulate breaking changes and they can consume those. Again, though, we do try very hard to make sure that the scope of changes that we're introducing from one version to the next is reasonable for them.
Excellent.
Cool. So, thanks for your time. It's always good to come and see the people who build the low-level stuff. And there's one of the faces. There's another one. It's very cool, man. I mean, it's actually rocket science to pull off good debugging and good profiling. So
it's definitely had power.
Totally, man. So great job, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good luck for the future and V5.
Looking forward to it.
Right on, man.
Working on it. Thanks.
Cheers.